Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Canada has become the latest G7 nation to announce a plan to recognise a Palestinian state as international pressure grows on Israel to end the war. It comes as Israeli gunfire killed at least 30 Palestinians waiting for humanitarian aid in northern Gaza yesterday, according to the Hamas-run civil defence agency. A Gaza civil defence spokesperson told the AFP news agency that Israeli fire wounded around 300 more people. Israel said the details of the incident are still being examined. Ricardo Perez, communication manager at UNICEF, has just returned from Gaza. He joins me on the line now. Very good morning to you, Ricardo.
Good morning, Phil.
Ricardo, would you paint a picture for me of the incubator with the three babies in it, please?
Yes, of course. That was one of the most striking things I saw in Gaza when I was there. We went to a small hospital, because most of the larger capacity ones have been partially or completely destroyed. And this was around Gaza City. And there were a few incubators in the new NATO ward that was built sort of on an emergency mode, because the other infrastructure around medical infrastructure was not sufficient to cope with the incoming demands. And I saw three babies, tiny babies, sharing one incubator, literally fighting for every breath. And it was heartbreaking. And actually, beyond that, next to them was another baby in a single incubator, because he was even more vulnerable. And he was taken out of his mother's womb after she got fatally shot in the head. And the doctors managed to extract the baby. And they're now trying to keep him alive. How long he will manage to fight for his life, we don't know, because the situation is very, very dire on the ground.
Where is the energy for the incubators coming from?
So at the moment, it's coming via a generator powered by fuel. But again, fuel is a big issue that we're advocating for, because we're not getting enough trucks. We have an average of 2 trucks coming in per day for the entire strip. So this is running low. And once fuel runs low, incubators will stop working and these babies won't make it.
The former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said yesterday he could not believe that Israel was a country with the capacity to launch pinpoint missile attacks on its neighbour Iran, over 1,000 kilometres away, but yet was incapable of organising the logistics of getting shipments of food and aid into Gaza. Can you tell me, in your assessment, how much of this can be ascribed to the difficult military situation in Gaza, and how much of it is at the contrivance of the Israelis?
Philip, that's a very good question. I think what's happening right now in Gaza is deprivation by design. We've seen during the ceasefire that when there is political will to allow more humanitarian aid in, for more corridors to be open, so Gaza can be flooded with supplies, life-saving supplies, it can happen, and we can make a difference. We can revert a lot of the terrible indicators that we're seeing across the strip, including for malnutrition, but also lack of water, waterborne diseases, and even protection. I mean, when the weapons go silent, children stop dying, they stop being killed. So I think a lot of it is more political will, more international pressure from the international community and member states to really push the government of Israel to change its policy and allow more humanitarian aid more rapidly through more corridors. We've seen airdrops in the last couple of days, and you know, always welcome to have more aid coming, even if through the skies. But these are far from being a solution to the deprivation that we're seeing on the ground, which is unprecedented.
Far from being a solution, I wonder, though, to what extent are things like that a misdirection, a fig leaf to cover up for the fact that nothing is going on?
Indeed. You know, airdrops are not very cost effective. They are not very safe for the community, and they're not efficient in and the proposal that is to provide life-saving aid to a desperate population, the volume as well is far below what humanitarian trucks can bring on a daily basis. And moreover, these airdrops end up falling in areas that are completely destroyed, where there's a lot of rubble and risks for people, civilians, to go and try and fetch that aid, including children, because they do run for it. And I saw these airdrops again, and you see how the population mobilizes and sees that as, you know, it's very symbolic to see something falling from the sky that supposedly is going to help saving people. So a lot of civilians, again, including children, run to these sites. And when they get there, you know, some of it will maybe have fallen in the sea, as we've seen images and videos recently. And the flour that is inside the boxes becomes useless because it's not wet and unusable. And you can't even cook with it. So it's not efficient, Philip. It's again, we welcome any step or effort to increase aid across the Gaza Strip, but we cannot think that for a second airdrops are the solution or a replacement for aid coming via trucks.
And not efficient, no, as you say, but talk to me about whether there is deliberate inefficiency in the land crossings where you have 30 people shot dead, 300 injured just yesterday, according to the Hamas-run civil defence agency. But is there, to your mind, a more immediately easy and better and more efficient way of organising these crossings so that they don't become a melee and a free fire zone?
Yes, I think the reason why it's becoming so dangerous for civilians to go close to these crossing points is because they're too few. We have Zikim open in the north, and we have Kerem Shalom opened in the middle area. So if we open more humanitarian crossings, more trucks will come in and we'll get close to the average that is needed right now, which is 600 trucks coming in every day. And when that happens, civilians will understand that the solution is coming to them. They don't have to risk their lives to get close to militarized zones to try and get hold of aid. They will know that the help will come to them as it has done before.
And why do the Israelis say that they are limiting it to these two crossings and I think also the Rafah crossing?
I don't have an answer to that, Philip. I can't really speak on the intention of the IDF or the Israelis. I think what needs to happen is more political will, more pressure from the international communities for more crossings to open. We have about 1,400 trucks ready to go in with supplies, nutrition supplies, hygiene supplies, medication for children from different crossings, not only in Israel, not only Kerem Shalom or Zikim or Gate 96, but also through Egypt and Jordan. So we just need those crossings to open.
Since being in Gaza, you have travelled to the West Bank and to a Bedouin community that were ethnically cleansed, I suppose is the correct term, at the hands of Israeli settlers. Can you tell us what you know about what happened there?
So yes, yesterday we went to a small village near Jericho in the West Bank, which is very, very beautiful place. I had never been, so for me, it was very impressive to see. And the reason we were there is because very recently, about 150 Bedouins were displaced from their village, which they had been for many generations, where they built a little school and a health center to make sure that children could access the very basic services that they need to develop. And they were forced to leave by violent settler activity. And they were displaced to an area where there's nothing. It's just a hill on the desert. And we had to respond immediately, providing them with some shelter and some clean water and some very basics so they can survive, because the heat is excruciating right now in the West Bank. And again, this is just one isolated incident. We know that settler violence is increasingly becoming a threat for children across the West Bank. And again, we're calling for the international community to put more pressure on that so it stops, because in the fog of war in Gaza, the West Bank is getting worse. Mm.
Where were the IDF? Where were the police as these settlers were doing what they did?
Well, apparently there's a very long, convoluted bureaucratic process to file a complaint about such activities that, from what I heard, don't end up resulting in any solution for those who got displaced. So I didn't see any sort of military presence or police presence in the area. So I think the Bedouin communities, from what we heard from mothers and fathers yesterday, they just rely on organizations such as UNICEF to help them, because otherwise they would be really pretty much left to suffer.
Israel acting with impunity in Gaza, settlers acting with impunity in the West Bank. It must feel like a pretty hopeless situation for UNICEF to be operating in.
It does, Philip. But at the same time, there's something about the resilience of people, the Palestinian people in Gaza and in the West Bank, that is very inspiring. They want to find solutions. They want to keep going. They want to resist the occupation that is happening right now, and they want their children to have a home and to thrive and to have dreams. So I don't think there's room for despair now. We have to look in the eyes of our children and give them hope. And even though it feels like a hopeless situation, we know that if we work together, we can find a solution.
Ricardo Perez, Communication Manager at UNICEF, thank you very much for talking to us this morning, and stay safe. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.